You're with us in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The Senate heard opening arguments yesterday in the impeachment trial of President Trump. It was the first of 3 days of opening arguments, making the case against the president in the trial on charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. So are you following the arguments? What concerns you about the proceedings? What questions do you have about documents withheld, the way evidence is presented? We're at 800-642-1234. Elise von Hagel is an associate professor of political science, and she teaches American government and gender studies at the UW-Superior. Elisa, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me again.
So House managers started presenting the evidence, the witness testimony. We heard from Representative Adam Schiff, the lead manager, who started the session with this really dramatic 2-hour presentation. There were all these historical flourishes and what sustains American democracy. What did you think of his opening argument?
So he was definitely the primary actor yesterday in terms of presenting the House's case, and he's clearly taken the lead in the presentation. And so, as you noted, he not only explained, you know, the historical importance and the, you know, the flourishes of the importance of this matter, but also just basically outlined the entire narrative. And it was the other House managers that discussed the smaller aspects or smaller bits and pieces of the puzzle, kind of fitting it together into a story. But he definitely took the lead. Absolutely.
So his presentation was then followed by this kind of mix of shorter presentations from his 6 colleagues. What did we see there?
I think what stood out to me the most, so Tuesday, there was a lot of discussion when there was the debate over the rules, a bit of acrimony and hostility, even maybe one might say, and they were even admonished by the Chief Justice, John Roberts. Both sides were as, and so this, we saw yesterday that there was definitely an effort to be, I think, more, you know, not as hostile, not as acrimonious, and not, you know, and much more civil tone overall.
Republicans and President Trump's lawyers, they won't have a chance to respond until it's looking like Saturday and into early next week because they take Sundays off. You know, what is the timeline here for this Senate trial, and what might we expect from the president's lawyers?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion over what they may possibly do. So as you mentioned, each side has 3 days, 24 hours within 3 days to present their oral arguments. And the president's lawyers will begin on Saturday, continuing on into Monday and Tuesday of the following week. And there's a lot of discussion of whether or not they'll take the entire time period, given that there's already seems to be a lot of senators who are tired, milling about, you know, leaving during the presentations and whatnot. And so there's, I think, you know, weighing the benefit of using that full 24 hours or making it shorter, concise to very clearly state your point and then let these senators go from the chamber.
Yeah, Republican senators were pretty quick to dismiss the presentations yesterday. And as you say, many of them were spotted like leaving the chamber in the middle of these presentations. Senator Roy Blunt said this is not a very deep case. What are you seeing there among the senators?
Well, there were more Republicans that were leaving during the presentations than Democrats, but there were a few Democrats that sneaked out as well. And I think that, first of all, I think it's just partly it's just long, long days of very intense, deep discussions of what has happened and transpired over time. And so, and also there's, even though there's upon pain of imprisonment, you know, threats for speaking during the trial, it has been noted that they've been passing notes, whispering, and even talking amongst one another. So I think one could say that just in general, the Senate is getting restless. And so it might be in the best, you know, might be in the best interest of the president's team to maybe perhaps not take that entire 24 hours time period to present their case.
We're talking with Elisa von Hagel. She's an associate professor of political science at UW-Superior. We're talking about opening arguments in the Senate impeachment trial. Your thoughts on what you're seeing in this trial, 800-642-1234. Elisa, there's been a lot of speculation about how the Senate trial will actually shake out. Has any of that speculation so far, it's early, has any of it come to fruition yet?
Well, so the speculation, I think, primarily is that there will be an acquittal. And there's been many comments by Republican senators that, you know, again, that are criticizing the, you know, the House's opening arguments. One thing I think that's been talked about and I think is not quite clear is the use or the introduction of additional witnesses or additional documents. So that debate was sort of punted down the road. And so after oral arguments, after the senators have time for questions, there is time for a vote where witnesses could be deposed potentially and then potentially brought to the floor of the Senate. So that's another issue that I think we still don't know, and it's unclear at this point as to where, you know, senators stand on this this particular issue. In terms of the small, I think there's three or four Republican senators that would have to flip to vote with the Democrats in order to bring these additional witnesses and documents to the trial.
The managers yesterday, they played so many video clips from witness testimony, including like current and former officials. What did you make of that type of testimony?
I think partly it's, you know, I mean, there's been so many individuals coming before the House testifying. I mean, I think it's partly using to educate or inform the senators, as, you know, no one can watch all however many hours of all of the different testimonies that were offered over the past month or so. And so I think partly it was to introduce those. But also, I think, again, they know that it's the, you know, that this is a long days for senators, and perhaps these some presentations are hopefully changing it up, keeping things a little bit interesting in there. And again, just hearing it from the individuals' mouths themselves, they find those clips that they find
most compelling
to. Yes, yes.
One thing I learned yesterday was milk on the Senate floor.
Yes.
So apparently they can drink water and milk on the Senate floor, no food. What did we learn anything about the milk?
The milk actually is, it dates back to the 1800s, where it was the, I was really interested in this.
And
it,
me too.
So apparently it's, back in the 1800s, it was the only antidote to peptic ulcers, which, you know, I guess senators most likely were or would have most often. And so there was a case of this, and so they allowed it then, and it's still today.
Traditions continue. Elisa, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Elisa von Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Superior. Coming up, we talk with the head of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Missy Hughes is here to look at business and labor issues around the state. We'll get her reaction as well to Governor Evers' State of the State address. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking with the leader of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Missy Hughes is here. Last night, Governor Evers delivered his State of the State address, giving special attention to farmers and the rural economy. But he made no mention of Foxconn, which was once envisioned as a $10 billion investment in Mount Pleasant. So what is the top jobs issue you see in Wisconsin? What do you think of tax incentives for private companies like Foxconn? How do you want the state to respond to record high farm debt and the dairy farm crisis? You have a line, 800-642-1234. Missy Hughes is Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, or WEDC. She previously spent 15 years as General Counsel with the dairy cooperative Organic Valley. Secretary Hughes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. How are you?
I'm doing well. What did you hear last night out of the governor, specifically on the rural economy? He's called a special session of the legislature next week to deal with the dairy crisis. How do you want to see him respond?
Well, what I heard from the governor is a very serious focus on rural Wisconsin and what we can do as the state government and the legislature and the governor working together to bring prosperity back to rural Wisconsin. It was amazing to see the group that was in the Capitol stand up with just a standing ovation at the idea of small family farms and how important they are to the DNA of Wisconsin. And so, I think we have plenty of opportunity to work together in the spirit of working towards those farms and the rest of the rural communities.
It's sobering, though, when you look at the loss of more than 800 dairy farms last year and the amount of debt that we're seeing. What should the state have in mind and do about this economically speaking?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point to bring up the debt issue for farmers. One of the typical policies that we've seen over the years in agricultural policy is to, when the farmers are in crisis, to allow them to take on more debt. And, what we see when that happens is just the hole getting deeper and deeper for these farmers, and it's really difficult to come back out of it. So we need policies that focus on creating more demand for the farmers' products, more respect for the farmers' work that they're doing on the land and bringing us food and fuel and fiber. And then, helping them to not get further into debt, but to come back out of that debt. And the debt comes from different places, Kate. It can come from, investing in your farm, but it can also come from things like healthcare debt and education debt. So those are all different pieces that are, dragging down on these farmers. And we need policies that bring up that supply chain and provide avenues for the farmers to go to market with their products. We have to help take the risk off of the farmers' shoulders that they're carrying, that burden they're carrying now, and bring that to the rest of us, because we're all part of that effort to bring food to our tables, of course. And so it's really important that we share in that burden with the farmers.
The governor wants to see increasing dairy exports by 20% by 2024. Will increased exports be able to boost this industry?
Well, again, that's where we need to look at taking more of the milk out of the supply chain and sending it to a good market. And that's the effort with exports. Because of that excess milk that we see in the market right now, it's dragging prices down. It's really simple supply and demand. And so if we can increase that demand with a big market, there's a lot of demand for protein in Asia and India. And I think it's really important to think about how do we access those markets and help the farmers, in small towns in Wisconsin, access those markets.
We're talking with Missy Hughes, the head of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, looking at the economy in Wisconsin and specifically the rural parts of our state. Secretary, one of the pieces last night was this new Office of Rural Prosperity that your organization, WEDC, will oversee. What do you hope to accomplish with this office?
Well, one of the things, so I've been on the job since October 1st, and one of the things that I've seen coming in is we have really excellent programs here at WEDC to help businesses and to help businesses that come to us and ask, we want to be a part of the Wisconsin economy. We want to grow our business if they're already here. How can you help us? And that's exactly what we want to do for rural communities. We already do some work with Main Streets and community development. But what we want to do is have that opportunity for the communities to come to us and say, we have this vision, and we want to explore making that reality with the state government and with the help of the state government. And so my role as the Office of Rural Prosperity will be to be the funnel for those communities so that they can then access all the different resources that there are, because all of the departments right now are very interested in working in rural communities all around Wisconsin, and we need to be able to pull that together and really bring the full force to help them when they're seeking that assistance.
The governor was noticeably silent last night about Foxconn, which the state has made and is making a huge investment in, billions of dollars. What have Foxconn officials told you about their timeline? We learned this week that they will be up and running this year.
I've had many, many conversations so far with the Foxconn leaders, and really what they've educated me about is their vision for Wisconn Valley and their thoughts on how advanced technology and advanced manufacturing in Wisconsin can help the whole economy. We're still seeking to understand the different projects that they have going on down there. I was down in November, and there was tremendous construction going on, and there's tremendous activity all in the Racine County area and in southeastern Wisconsin. So, we're assisting them with the infrastructure and the land, and so it's encouraging to see what they're saying and to hear that they're coming out this year.
Do we have any indication that they're on target to meet their job goals for tax incentives?
So they have a responsibility to send in a report by April 1st to my organization, and at that point we'll review what they've submitted as far as their jobs. But, until they do that, I don't really have a sense of anything that I can say. I see things in the media, but I'm going to wait for them to submit their report.
But do you feel like there is a good communication channel between the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation and Foxconn right now?
Yeah, there is a good line of communication between WEDC and Foxconn. There are weekly and monthly meetings between Foxconn and state officials and county officials, local officials. There is a tremendous amount of communication that has been built up. It's been really critical towards the success of the program and the project. So I think it's important that communication continues, and it has been.
Foxconn's founder, Terry Goh, has said that there's been a lot of difficulty for Foxconn to find workers here in the U.S., and there's been talk of bringing workers in from other places. What about building a workforce for Foxconn? What have you been talking about there?
Well, everybody is talking about workforce in the state of Wisconsin. We have, a population that is not increasing at the same needs as we have for jobs. And so everyone is having that conversation. Foxconn is just one of our businesses that is approaching us with, how can we do that? What are the innovative ways we can look at increasing our workforce? Do we have folks on the sidelines that we can bring into the workforce? And, if you think about someone who might be staying at home because they don't have access to affordable child care, or they just don't have access to childcare, or they're taking care of a senior in their home. How can we help them have that care so that then they can come into the workforce? Those are the innovative places, I think, where we need to be looking for workforce. And I know Foxconn has been doing a lot of work with that, too. I think one of the things that you mentioned, Kate, that I just want to bring us back to is the governor not mentioning Foxconn in the state of the state. And, it's because we have a real focus on rural and really what we want to be looking at. And one of the things about Foxconn is it takes up a lot of the conversation about economic development in Wisconsin. And we want to make sure that rural communities and small businesses all around the state know that they can also access the economic development opportunities that the state offers. And so it's really important that as much as we talk about Foxconn, we also talk about the other opportunities so that everybody has access to those opportunities.
Missy, we've been talking a lot about the rural economy and the challenges there, but there are lots of challenges in urban parts of our state. Central Milwaukee has a poverty rate of over 34%, Beloit poverty rate 25%. What is the state doing? What is the governor proposing to do to help people in cities who are struggling?
Well, when I sat down with the governor and talked with him about taking this role, he completely said to me, look, a Main Street in Viroqua, Wisconsin, which is where I'm from, is just as important to me as a main street in a community in the north side of Milwaukee or in one of our urban areas. What the governor is really interested in is building communities and making sure that a community has the strength that it needs and the infrastructure that it needs to be all that it wants to be. So, you know, it's not a question of rural versus urban, but it is a question of focusing on those communities that need help and need access.
We only have a few seconds. What keeps you up at night? What are you grappling with in your job that is you've only been in for months?
Well, I have been sleeping very well because I actually get to see the incredible projects and incredible public-private partnerships that are happening all around the state. And, you know, there's a lot of really good news with what's happening in Wisconsin. There's incredible innovation and folks who are, you know, starting businesses on main streets, technology startups. There's just a ton of things that are going on. Always, you know, what keeps me up is thinking about the farmers. I worked for farmers for 15 years, and it's one of the reasons I took this job is to make sure we can be, we're smart people. We can figure this out. And, you know, we just need to bring the right people together. And that's what we're going to do with the Rural Commission, the Blue Ribbon Commission.
And we have to stop right there, okay, Missy.
Sorry.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. Appreciate it.
Missy Hughes, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Back for more analysis on the state of the state after this news update. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Heads up here on our programming plans. The Senate impeachment trial of President Trump continues today at noon with the House impeachment managers continuing day two of opening arguments. You can hear live NPR coverage on WPR's News and Classical Network and online at WPR.org. Here on the Ideas Network, we'll keep you up to date on the proceedings and we'll invite you to join the conversation. Right now, we're recapping Governor Tony Evers' State of the State address delivered in prime time last night before a joint meeting of the State Senate and Assembly.
As I reflect on my first year in office, although there were setbacks and occasional political posturing, what I call huffing and puffing, we also had a lot of success, and I'm proud of everything we accomplished in just a year's time.
Did you watch Governor Evers' address? What did you think? What did you agree with? Where do you differ with the governor's priorities? Do you see any of these priorities gaining traction, bipartisan support? We're at 800-642-1234. J.R. Ross is editor of WisPolitics.com. J.R., welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. So last night we saw our 46th governor give his second State of the State with a year under his belt. Let's start with the priorities. What would Governor Evers like to see happen in 2020? What stuck out to you?
Well, there's a whole list of things he wants lawmakers to do, but I think the main thing that Evers wanted to push last night was this three-pronged attack to try and address the dairy crisis we have in Wisconsin. He talked about how we're losing farms every day, that what he's proposing would be no silver bullet, but it would be something that would help this industry that's going through a very difficult time. Now, what's interesting is if you look at the Republican reaction last night to the speech, for the most part, it was somewhat dismissive, a lot of things. Scott Fitzgerald, the Senate Majority Leader, said they would at least listen to these ideas about the ag industry. The governor said he wants to call a special session. I'm not sure that the lawmakers will convene that special session. They could do it on the regular floor period, but they might actually pay some heed to this proposal. They are facing a time crunch, however, which might sound kind of odd because we're here in, you know, mid to late January, but the state Senate plans to be on the floor February 19th and likely one day in March. The state assembly plans to be on the floor maybe through the end of February and be done. So it is rare to see a big package of bills announced in late January and clear legislature in less than 6 weeks now.
Logistics
they could come
here.
Back and finish it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Logistically, it's a tight squeeze. And we heard last night Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said, we don't know what's in this package. We haven't seen this legislation yet.
No. And last night I asked the governor's office for a price tag on what he was talking about. They said that would come out today along with the formal release of the bills. So there's a lot of work to be done. However, this is an issue that is pressing for a lot of people. And don't forget, you know, our farms in Wisconsin are largely in rural areas, obviously. For the most part, Republicans represent those rural areas. So Evers is kind of playing on their turf, kind of like this is an issue back home for Republicans more than it is for Democrats. And not that Democrats don't care, obviously, but this is more something in the backyards of Republican lawmakers. How are they going to react to these proposals?
Well, when you talk about this three-pronged approach to supporting the state's agriculture industry, what are in these prongs? Can you break it down for us?
First prong, legislation. And again, I have not seen the details of the bills, but there are things like a goal of increasing the state's dairy exports to 20% of the nation's milk supply by 2024, improving access to mental health services for farmers, creating a program to help them connect the food they produce with universities, hospitals, and local businesses. Right now we have a farm-to-fork program that does it for schools. This is another version of that. So that's prong one. Prong two is creating what he's calling the Office of Rural Prosperity underneath the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. It would help farmers navigate state programs and resources for those in smaller communities. The final piece is a Blue Ribbon Commission to promote agriculture and rural economic prosperity. Again, haven't seen details of these things, but we got the broad overview last night.
Right. So we got a toe dip last night. You know, the governor previously had called a special session to address gun control policy, and the legislature gaveled in, gaveled out. Do you anticipate a similar situation here with agriculture?
No. They didn't give any indication that, I mean, and why I say no is because with the gun proposals, Republican leadership was dismissive immediately. They view those gun bills as infringements upon Second Amendment rights. They were not going to take them up. At least last night, they expressed a willingness to listen to what the governor had to say. Now, again, they made no commitments, but they're at least open to it. And logistically, you know, special session is a governor can designate a special session and says, I want you to take up these bills. The legislature is not bound to even meet that special session. They can also do these bills in regular session, which they have a calendar already that has weeks laid out this month, February, March, to do stuff. So they can do it pretty much whenever they're going to be on the floor anyway. I guess the question is, do they have the time? That's still a thing. Do they have the time to do this? Because we're facing a crunch before they want to go out and start campaigning.
J.R. Ross is editor of WisPolitics. He's been covering Wisconsin government and politics for 20 years, and he's bringing us analysis on last night's State of the State address. You can join in. Do you live in a rural area? What do you think of the governor's call for an Office of Rural Prosperity? What kinds of help would you like to see this office provide? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. JR, as you mentioned, election year, a census year, which means the state will be redrawing its legislative districts, a process controlled by the legislature. How does Governor Evers want to approach that differently?
Well, I want to preface this by saying I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV, so I can't tell you what weight this proposal brings, because, again, we have not seen the executive order. But what he talked about was creating what he calls a nonpartisan redistricting commission. Again, haven't seen the details, don't know how he defines nonpartisan. Like, does he appoint everybody? Do Republicans get appointments or whatnot? But anyway, it'd be this commission that he's going to draw what he calls the people's maps. This commission would go to each of Wisconsin's congressional districts, take testimony, draw a quote-unquote fair map, and then hand it to the legislature and say, okay, here, consider this now. From what I understand the state constitution, the power to draw those lines every 10 years rests in the hands of lawmakers. So the governor can't supersede that. He can't make them take it up. So from what I can tell so far, it acts just like a proposal of, hey, you guys should look at this map. But I don't think it carries any weight. Again, not being a lawyer, not seeing the details, it does not appear to have any weight of law behind it other than here's a way to draw a map that's not as Republican as the one you guys want to draw.
The governor, as you said the commission would be made up of citizens, not lawmakers, not lobbyists, not consultants. Is this an unusual thing? Have you seen other states go this route?
Well, you know, other states, we always hear about those who want to go to a nonpartisan redistricting process always talk about the Iowa model. In Iowa, they have a commission that draws maps. The legislature gets up or down votes on the maps without amendments, and I'm really glossing over the whole details of that process, but they have something like that in Iowa. But as far as like a governor creating a commission to draw a map when that commission doesn't have the power to draw the map, I don't know if I've seen that before. But really for Evers, I mean, even though it doesn't carry any weight of law, as far as I can tell, this is a very important issue to the Democratic base. Members of that party are very fired up about this, and you've seen just the number of...
Your dog is fired up about it as well. There's the base.
Yes, the dangers of the home office.
That's all right.
So we've seen a number of referendums passed in various states when it comes to this stuff. So I get the impression that this is feeding red meat to his base, saying, hey, I hear your concerns. I want to do something about it just like you do.
So how is this different from 10 years ago when our state's current maps were drawn?
Well, to be honest with you, 10 years ago was an aberration in some ways. And why I say that is more often than not in the modern era of redistricting, the courts have drawn our maps. You have to take redistricting, and not to give a history lecture, but separate redistricting pre-1960 and post-1960. Starting in the 1960s, we had the Voting Rights Act, these various requirements for, you know, boundaries. Starting then, I think it was the 1970s was the only time the maps were drawn without court intervention other than 2011. So in 2011, the reason why it would happen was because we had unified control in the Capitol. Republicans controlled both the Assembly and the Senate and the governor's office. They could draw the map. Well, now it's much different because you have Evers in the governor's office. Now, what you have to watch, just to be a little geek, is if Republicans can get 2/3 majorities of both houses this fall, they can override Evers' veto. But short of that, we're likely heading the courts again to draw our maps once all said and done.
Well, let's look at education here for a moment. Daniel emailed to say he's very excited to see that the governor is announcing a task force that will address the student loan debt in Wisconsin. If done properly, that could perhaps set an entire generation up for success, Daniel says, and simulate economic growth in the state. What do you see coming out of a student debt task force?
Good question. Because much like with the other stuff, we have not seen the details yet. He announced the executive order he's going to sign, but we haven't seen a physical copy of it to know what this thing looks like, what powers it might have, what it can do. State Treasurer Sarah Galuski has been talking about this issue during her term in office so far. She's been pushing the idea of addressing student loan debt, using the powers of that office to do it. But I don't know what powers they have without legislative approval to do something. We've seen ideas in the past about creating a refinancing commission in the state. That hasn't gone anywhere with Republicans, and I don't see it moving with them now. So what can this thing do? I guess you have to stay tuned and see what this executive order says.
We're staying tuned with What's Politics editor J.R. Ross as our guide, giving analysis on Governor Evers' State of the State address last night. Speech was 33 minutes to the Assembly and the Senate, seated there in the chamber. What are you worried about as Governor Evers completes his first year in office? What are you excited about? On the healthcare front, how do you feel about the governor's priority to cap the cost of insulin and crack down on vaping among young people? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment with J.R. Ross as our guide right here on the Ideas Network. We're getting a reaction from last night's State of the State address. Second such address by Governor Tony Evers. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The speech was held in front of a joint session of the legislature. The governor laid out his priorities for the year, sketching them out. Did you watch or listen? What did you think of it? How does the governor's agenda on health and education, on transportation, how does it line up with your priorities? We're at 800-642-1234. And WisPolitics.com editor J.R. Ross stays with us as our guide with this analysis. So, JR, the governor mentioned some of the bills of the last year that had bipartisan support, addressing the legislatures involved by name. He also threw out this statistic.
So one of the things I'm most proud of is that more than 95% of the bills I signed my first year in office had bipartisan support.
95% had bipartisan support, a number that we may not think about there because there is so much tension between Republicans and Democrats. What did you make of that?
I've heard that line before, in fact, from Governor Scott Walker several times in his State of the State addresses. Look, they pass so many bills in the course of a session that overwhelmingly they're done on voice votes because they're not controversial items. So, yeah, you get bipartisan votes on most things that happen. But on big ticket items, much different story. So I don't notice a difference between this session and when Governor Walker was in office in terms of that bipartisanship for things that are being passed through the both houses of legislature.
And what you saw last night during the State of the State, partisanship is almost always on display. Governor touts an accomplishment. His party stands and cheers. The other party stays quietly seated. What should Wisconsinites be watching for at home as we look at this State of the State ritual each year?
The unusual situations that they're put in. For example, Governor Evers last night touted a tax cut that he signed in the state budget. From what I could see, only Democrats stood and cheered for that line. They all voted against the budget that contained that tax cut. Republicans, who all but a handful supported that tax cut in the budget, didn't stand, and at best got tepid clapping. It was really odd to watch Republicans not cheering really what was kind of their accomplishment with the governor, while Democrats, who weren't part of it, did.
So it's almost like the lawmakers need a roadmap for what to when to clap, when to not. I don't know. Well,
we've actually seen those before. I've not yet. We've seen those before. But yeah, I've also seen lawmakers play bingo during the speeches with like words to expect. You know, look, Democrats are trying to be good loyalists to the governor. Republicans don't want to give him credit. They want to see him be a one-term governor. That's the way it is for both sides. I mean, if the roles were reversed, it'd be the exact same way. But there is definitely a lack of a relationship in the Capitol between the two sides right now. It's only gotten worse this year compared to the past 6-7 years.
We were talking earlier about the three-pronged approach to agriculture. Another three-prong area that the governor is looking at is this. Let's take a listen.
We have to connect the dots and focus on the fundamentals of economic development. It's pretty simple stuff, folks. Good roads, good schools, and good health care.
Where did he elaborate there on roads, schools, and health care?
Actually, not a whole lot, but that harkens back to his 2018 campaign. Go back and look when he ran for this office, and those are three things he stressed over and over and over again. So it's a reminder that. Now, he did talk about, for example, some accomplishments. He did talk about with the transportation budget that they, the lowest level of bonding, and I can't remember how many years and that. But again, another interesting one, he got a couple of digs on Governor Scott Walker last night. One of them was, if you recall back in that 2018 campaign, Walker accused Evers of wanting to raise the gas tax by up to a dollar. Said that over and over again, seizing on a comment that Evers had made about, you know, basically he was asked about a gas tax hike and kind of gave a vague answer about how much it might be. Evers was quick to point out that his budget did not raise the gas tax by a dollar, little elbow at Scott Walker. But instead, what it did was Republicans took out the 8-cent gas tax hike he wanted and put in a fee increase. Now, that fee increase to generate revenue, which helps address the transportation funding issue. So Evers did tout that last night. He touted other smaller, you know, healthcare things. He touted, like with schools, that they invested more money into K-12 education, not as much as he wanted, elbow Republicans, but still a big boost in general school aid. So there was some progress on those fronts, despite split government this past year.
We're talking with J.R. Ross, editor of Wispolitics, and was at the Capitol last night for Governor Evers' State of the State address. He's bringing us up to speed on the policies and the politics of last night. With your thoughts as well, 800-642-1234. We heard from Chris, who called from Adams County, to say that Chris wants the governor to address health and believes with high rates of obesity that the state should provide money for nutrition, for better health options for Wisconsinites. Did the governor mention funding toward nutrition health programs in particular at all or since taking office?
That's a good question. I can't remember everything he said about that topic off the top of my head. Nothing's really ringing a bell right now.
What other accomplishments from his first year did the governor give a nod to last night? Because he had people standing in the audience as he was going through those accomplishments.
Let's see, accomplishments. Talking about the budget that got done. It's interesting. He kind of dismissed the political rancor at times as huffing and puffing, that they got a lot of bills through with bipartisan votes. He thanked their lawmakers and the progress they made on some bipartisan bills. But, I mean, honestly, a lot of this stuff, the focus of this is what he wants to do going ahead. Evers is trying to tee up this spring about what he wants to get done. And you're also seeing a little bit of, like, what his agenda would be if he had a magic wand, Waverly Kaplan, and say, we're going to do all of this. What will be interesting to see is other stuff that does not get done between now and sometime this spring. Does it come back in the second session that Evers is governor? Because don't forget, he is also starting to tee up toward that 2022 reelection. Typically, governors I've covered, they have a difficult budget their first go-round in terms of, like, spending and taxes. Then the second budget is the reelect budget. That's where you tee up all the good stuff you want to deliver. So Evers is starting to tee up that next budget. I mean, crazy as it sounds, that next budget will be introduced in just about 13 months, and that'll help set the tone for his reelect in 2022.
JR, Senator Roger Roth gave the Republican response. What did we hear out of Senator Roth?
Kind of a lot of, I'm trying to think. I'm sorry. That was a part of my assignment last night. I was catching. I mean, honestly, we went and got the leadership after the speech was over. Robin Voss is very dismissive of the governor, saying essentially, this guy is always doing politics. He's not giving us details. He's not inviting Republicans to work with him on anything.
The highest number of executive orders of any first-year governor in state history.
Yep, that's something we found. We took a look late last year and found that number. Scott Fitzgerald, the Senate Majority Leader, again, said he'd be open to the ag ideas, was dismissive of the stuff about redistricting that, you know, he can introduce it, but we're not going to take it up. I mean, honestly, I didn't see a thaw of the relationship that we've seen so far, which has been quite honestly a little bit poisonous this year between Governor Evers and his two legislative leaders.
So you've watched a number of these State of the State addresses through your career from different administrations. How did this one compare in any way in content, in tenor?
Oh, that's a good question because there's such different governors. I mean, Governor Evers is not known as a terribly strong public speaker. And, you know, Governor Walker wasn't to start. You know, don't forget, their last impression of Governor Walker giving a State of the State was after, you know, 7-8 years of doing it. He had gotten a certain rhythm down in his speaking. Governor Evers is kind of a pretty mellow guy, and it comes across in the way he speaks. So he's not like, he doesn't give stem winders. Jim Doyle, I'm trying to think back to his speeches. He wasn't necessarily a kind of a rah-rah type guy either. I mean, Tommy Thompson, you know, for Tommy, these were like chances to, you know, the eagle soar and Harley's roar kind of thing. He was really into that, you know, everybody getting on their feet stuff.
The rhetoric, yeah.
We're
out of time, JR. Thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime. Take care.
Take care. JR Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com. Find more coverage of the governor's State of the State and the Politics Podcast. It's all at WPR.org. Just ahead, we look at how to quit your job and do it well. And NPR business correspondent talks with us about the best strategies and what you can do to avoid burning bridges with your employer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.